good. Yeah. We want identification to the picture, so it's very, very hard.
She married Curry Kid.
She's still around here somewhere.
Huff, hey, who?
Stuffy Huff.
Yeah.
Curry Kid.
His daughter's still around.
Yeah, well, Stuffy Huff.
They just found his tag a little while ago. Did you read about that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Snuffy Huff. Somebody sent it back up here, and they...
They found it in New York, didn't they?
They found it in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. His transit tag.
Number one, number...
You're joking.
What it was.
No,
yeah. And they going to how in the hell it ever got there. His transit tag, and they sent it back up here, and they found it.
Belonged to Clarence.
I would imagine, you know...
I still have, somewhere in my... The transit tag that says transit operator 491.
Oh yeah, I got mine too.
Yellow.
I got the number from the front of my basket hat too.
Yeah, I got that, but I haven't got my transit tag. Bert Hughes said, "Give me that ruddy tag, Matt. You're not going to use it anymore."
When you quit, you have to turn it down. If you wouldn't get your paycheck, then you turn it down.
Do you know what I always think about is that old colored fella that used to come down from the chicken fire in Windsor and Lonsdale, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that was all kinds of chicken farms up there. That old colored fella, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it, yeah.
Yeah, he got on my bus down at the ferry wharf one time, that Negro fellow, and he had a roll of tar paper over his shoulder. And when he got on, I said, "For God's sake, George, boy, you sure scared me there." And he laughed me up. He thought that was a big joke.
And the other old gentleman, do you remember George Kitson, who was a detective Vancouver City Police?
Yeah.
That's real hard-looking man, but
Lonsdale,
real prince.
Yeah, that was the guy with the kink nose.
Yeah.
Who's that other Negro
fella?
Yeah, he got that nose.
Right? Get all dressed up on. I think he worked in Burrard Yard.
No.
And he used to.
I think he's a window cleaner.
The Negro fella.
No, the Negro fella.
He used to get all cleaner. Jesus, all dressed up on.
You think of the guy who used to go around dressing the woman,
you know?
Oh, that wasn't Clarence St. John's father, was it?
St. John,
He lived down 23rd West.
Somewhere around there.
His son has a barber shop up 23rd Lonsdale.
Yeah.
Well, he was a longshoreman.
Yeah.
Mary Brown.
A longshoreman. I thought he worked in the Burrard Yard.
How about the old fella that used to, he was a real elderly gentleman, wasn't he? Mm. That used to dress up as a woman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he had veils and
wedding gowns
and the window washer.
Yeah, he lived upstairs over the BC Electric office.
Yeah, that's right. But he used to board the streetcar, and I can remember him boarding the car once, and the car was full, and he stood in there with his veil hanging down, and somebody got up and said, "Please have my seat."
Said, "Thank you very much."
But he was fairly inoffensive.
I
understand that he wasn't permitted to go to Vancouver.
That's right.
That's right.
He was accepted him in North Van as a.
Well, I guess they were in the ladies.
He did have a problem with the North Van ferries once.
Pardon me.
He had a problem with the North Van ferries where he went into the women's laboratory.
Remember, he came out of McLeod's restaurant one day and was walking over to the BC Electric building to his apartment, and that. I'd come up with a Lonsdale streetcar, and of course the Lynn Valley switch was against me, so I forget all about it. So I part way up the switch, so whip it in reverse and then back down. Lynn Valley car is behind me, and he walks right in between, and they both go. And he had missed it by a second. Flat number.
Oh, Jesus. Remember the time we dumped Mrs. McLeod on Lonsdale?
Oh, and I still don't mention that. It cost the BC Electric, what was it, $500-$600? And I started up without bells.
Yeah.
And she was trying to ride the
back. She did put her, I watched her come up from the back stairs. I'm his conductor, and she just went to put her foot like this, and she got her foot on there, and Harry took off. She just went, "Katooly."
She was trying to ride the back step like a scooter. Yeah, and she never forgot that. Nope. Every time she saw me, she would say, "I remember you."
Yeah. We were trying to convince her that she shouldn't do anything about it.
Incidentally, Russ, I had to mark time with my hat off for that incident.
Yeah.
And I went over to Vancouver, and McKenzie was his name.
Art McKenzie.
Yeah. And he said, mind you, Harry, we're not picking on you, but these kind of incidents, there's a mandatory penalty. And starting up without bells constitutes a 2-day layoff. Well, I accepted that. So I went back to Bert Hughes, and I told him what had taken place, and he said, well, what 2 days do you want off?
Well, talking about bells, remember when we used to be on Lonsdale, and we used to only go to Windsor, and we had all the ski crew on there, and there were bells ringing in. They'd hit, catch their skis in the bell cord, and everything else, and you were stopping. And finally, you'd open the front doors, and you look back, and you say, oh, that's just skis, so you just keep going.
Well, Ben, oddly, you should mention that I remember this over the years, that these people would come over on the last ferry at 1:10, and they'd board the streetcar, and they'd had something to drink. But, God, how, they carry everything on their back, stoves and wood. Everything from their cabins.
Stoves. There was nothing there, the pot-belly stoves.
And they walked all the way from Windsor Road to the foot of the mountain first before they started to climb.
That's right. Yeah. Across the creek there, that's where they started the trail, actually.
They used to go up there with everything, lumber, anything you could think of. Tin. Yeah.
Carried everything on their back.
Everything on their back.
That was a good hike itself, right from Windsor up to the foot of the mountain.
They have one of the little tin cans with a candle in it, a bug.
A bug. Yeah.
Remember, well, then we graduated to carbide labs. A few of the stinking things, they turned them off
the
just as they got on the streetcar.
They used to always come down from Mount Seymour, and they'd walk down there, and they'd be soaking wet, and they'd say, could I go behind that curtain and change my clothes? So they go behind their curtain, but they forgot that the curtain only went halfway down. And they would be stripped naked, standing behind there, trying to change the dried clothes and trying to hide behind a half curtain.
Who was it? Was it George Rowe or Bunny Abbott was going up the boulevard one time, and they had the two-man cars? And he had to take a crap. So what he did was, he laid a newspaper out on the floor, opened the door and flung it out. It didn't all go out. Is that on the tape?
I think so.
I didn't know it was on the tape.
I'm going to punch the back out of that tape on his back.
You're going to lose it. Owen, you were saying about the... My father was working in the shipyard, and I was operating a Capilano streetcar on a Sunday afternoon. And out of sheer curiosity, he counted the number of passengers that disembarked from the Capilano car. This is in 1945-46, and he counted 149 passengers that disembarked from that car, and the operator was 150, and I was on time.
Is that right?
No stops, eh?
No stops.
No, I can remember in those days, when I first started, like that first summer, working the Capilano Sunday afternoon. They'd come off the ferry in hordes, and you
just
couldn't get
hordes.
Them all on at times. You'd be down there, well, 3, 4, or 5 minutes late before you could get away. You'd have them crammed in like sardines, and you'd have to take off and leave.
Well, the local people couldn't take the streetcar.
You couldn't,
Harold.
You couldn't move.
Harold, you forgot to mention that the fare was 6 cents.
Yeah.
And everybody would give you a dime.
And yeah.
And you'd have to give them the 6 cents to put in the fare. And that 4 cents change,
and
threw a tremendous amount of.
It's right on my report in the office today on our record. I was on the Capilano streetcar, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and the time recorded was 3:25. I was 5 minutes late at the ferry wharf then, and this passenger got on and gave me the dime, and I slid the 6 cents into the box, and give them the 4 cent change, and it said, deposited passengers fare in farebox, warned. That's what's wrote on my report.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, you couldn't put passengers' fare in. They had to put their own fare in the box.
Harold,
rules.
I would be quite interested to go back to the BC Electric, to the hydro now, and say, may I see my file and see what went on in
the
past 35 years?
You can go back anytime you want.
It didn't used to be.
That
file was closed to an employee.
Would they let you see your file?
Sure, they can.
You can see them now.
How much money did you used to carry on that? Pennies, and that would be a terrific amount of change.
Well, at the end there, we carried $125.
And originally it was
20. $20,
yeah.
It was 80 when I started.
20?
Yeah, it was 80 when I started. And then it was 100 when I was on there.
It went 125 when we finished.
It was 100.
That was in tickets and coins and passes.
And I don't think anybody was ever held up.
No.
We had passes to sell those times,
right,
too, didn't we? Weekly
passes. Talking about that Sunday afternoon,
the settlers
with all the people
the settlers
coming
ticket,
over.
Too, the 7 cents.
I can remember running out of nickels and pennies, and was it Joe Yearsley or that other fella that used to come out, remember,
on
Sundays, was it Ray, and sell you more nickels and pennies now, because there was no way you could keep up with the,
Well, mind you, George, pre-war, the settler's ticket was 10 for 70 cents, and you could ride from the Topolin Valley
to Marpole,
for 7 cents.
That's right.
Mind you,
you paid your nickel ferry fare.
It
was
12 cents
altogether.
Yeah. And the local tickets were 6 tickets for 35 cents.
Okay. Could you hang on?
I remember that because Lindsay Williamson was always short of money, and he'd meet you on the switch sometimes, and he'd say, I'll give you 2 locals for 1 settler. Another time he'd say, sell me 25 pennies, will you? We used to get them in tubes of 50. And he was so short of cash, he'd say, sell me 25 pennies. Oh, boy.
Well,
he was always playing the races.
I heard the ultimate in that, the 2-car trains in Vancouver, and the chappie was the conductor in the 2nd car of the 2-car train. And he apparently only had 25 cents. And every time that a passenger boarded and wanted change for 25 cents, he leaned into the car ahead and got the change for the 25 cents. If the guy wanted a strip of 4 tickets, he leaned into the car ahead and got the strip of... And he finished his shift with 25 cents.
Gee, that'll be something pretty
good. You're joking.
No, that would have never worked in North Van on a
Sunday. Oh, no, you were on your own.
Well, I think Lindsay Williamson was about the worst one for being short of money all the time.
Now,
I
mind
hope George
you,
never hears of this, you know, his son's still around.
Mind you, Owen, that if it still applies now in the hydro, that if you were to misappropriate this change fund, it was subject to instant dismissal. And yet, I wouldn't doubt that there were 95% of the men on the job that would say, "Ew, boy, I couldn't tell you how much money I've got." And yet,
Well, I remember one time when I was on the extra list, sitting down in under Payne's Hardware in the bullpen, and Rogers and another fellow from Vancouver came over to check change funds, and they told me to go out and relieve the fellow on the Lynn Valley streetcar and send him in. And when I got out there, it was Lindsay Williamson. And he, instead of running down into the office right then, he went down to the bottom and he went over to Charlie or Percy Eddington and boarded their roll of bills. And he went up and they counted his change fund and he was up to par.
Was there a chapel down in old Payne's Hardware down there when it used to be down in the basement?